Chapter 14. The Chrono Guard. Spec Ops 12 is the Chrono Guard, the governmental department dealing with temporal stability. Its job is to maintain the integrity of the Standard History Event Line, SHI, and police the time stream against any unauthorized changes or usage. Its most brilliant work is never noticed, as changes in the past always seem to have been that way. Planet-destroying cataclysms generally happen twice a week, but are carefully rerouted by skilled ChronoGuard operatives. The citizenry never notices a thing. Which is just as well, really. The ChronoGuard had its regional offices in the old Spec Ops building where I had worked at SO-27, the literary detectives. It was a large, no-nonsense Germanic design that had certainly seen better days. Landon and I walked into what had once been the main debriefing room, Friday shuffling in behind us, hands thrust deeply in his pockets and head nodding to the beat of his Walkman. Of course, this being the Chrono Guard, they already had a list of attendees from the forms we'd filled out at the end of the evening, which seemed to work quite well until a couple with a spotty kid in front of us found they weren't on the list. "Oh dear," said the woman at the registration desk in an apologetic tone. "But it seems that you don't stay until the end of the presentation, so we've been unable to include you in the registration process. You're going to have to come to the next careers presentation in 6 months' time." The father of the group scratched his head for a moment, stopped to say something, thought better of it, and then departed, arguing with his wife. "Mr. and Mrs. Park Lane next, and their son Friday," I said to the woman, who blinked for a few seconds, looked at Friday, gave a shy smile, and then started to chatter and gush in a most unseemly manner. "Mr. Next, Friday, how do you do? I've always wanted to meet you again, for the first time. May I shake you by the hand and congratulate you on—" She stopped, realized she was being a bit previous and making a fool of herself, so coughed in an embarrassed manner before smoothing her skirt absently and sitting down again. "Sorry. Welcome to the presentation. Here are your badges and your information pack. If you would like to go in, Captain Scintilla will join you soon." We dutifully took our seats, and Friday slouched in a very obvious don't-give-a-monkey's manner until I told him to sit up straight, which he didn't like, but sat up nonetheless. "What are we doing here?" he asked in a bored voice. "And why the time industry? What about plumbing or something?" "Because your grandfather was a time operative." "Yeah," he grunted, "and look what happened to him." Landon and I exchanged glances. Friday was right. Ending up not having existed wasn't a terrific end to a promising career. "Well," said a youthful-looking man in the pale blue uniform of the Chrono Guard, who up until now had been helping escort the previous group out of the room. "My name is Captain Bendix Scintilla, and I am head of Chrono Guard recruitment. I'd like to welcome all of you to this Chrono Guard careers presentation, and hope that this short talk might go some way toward explaining what it is we done. Did. Do. Anyhow, my aims are twofold. Secondly, to try to demonstrate to the young people here that a career in the time industry is a very exciting prospect indeed, and, firstly, to lift the lid on the temporal trade and explode a few common myths and misunderstandings. As I'm about to say, did say, or would say, my name is Bendix Scintilla, and I was died on March 16th, 3291. I'm 23 years old in my own personal time, 726 in my elapsed work time, and you meet me 27% through my life." He smiled, unaware that he was making very little sense. I was used to it, but by the manner in which the rest of the audience members were scratching their heads and looking at one another, they weren't. Bendix picked up a solid bar of yellow plastic that was about 3 feet long, 2 inches wide, and domed at either end. "Does anyone know what this is?" he asked. There was silence, so he passed it to the nearest family and told them to pass it on. "Anyone who can guess wins a prize." The first family shrugged and passed it to us. Friday gave it the most cursory of glances, and I passed it on. Yes, sir? Asked Bendix, pointing to a man in the front row who was with his painfully thin wife and a pair of geeky-looking twins. Me? Said the man in a confused voice. Yes, I understand you have a question. Sorry, I should have explained. To save time, I thought I'd ask you before you actually raised your hand. Oh, said the man, and then he shrugged and said, I was wondering, since we were told this was the only open day for 6 months, just who the previous group filing out of the door was, and why were they looking at us in that extremely inquisitive manner? Why, that was you, good people, of course. In order not to keep you from your busy schedules, this meeting actually takes no time at all. The moment you arrived was precisely the time you left, only out of the other entrance, so you wouldn't meet yourselves. As soon as he'd said it, a twitter of understanding and wonderment went through the small group. I'd experienced the Chrono Guard in the past, so these sorts of cheap parlor tricks didn't impress me. But for many of the people present, to whom time was immutable, it was something new and exciting. Scintilla had been doing this show for many years and knew how to get an audience's attention. Time is odd, said Bendix. Very odd. It's odder than almost anything you can think of. What you consider the usual march of time, effect rather quaintly following cause and so forth, is actually a useful illusion impressed upon you by rules of physics so very benign that we consider them devised by something awfully friendly indeed. If it weren't for time, everything would happen at the same instant, and existence would become tirelessly frenetic and be over very quickly. But before we get into all that, let's have a show of hands to see who is actually considering a career in time. Quite a few hands went up, but Friday's was not among them. I noticed Scintilla staring in our direction as he asked, and he seemed put out by Friday's intransigence. Yes, miss? You have a question? He pointed to a young girl sitting in the back row with her expensive-looking parents. How did you know I was going to ask a question? That was your question, wasn't it? Yes. Because you've already asked it. I haven't. Actually, you have. Everything that makes up what you call the present is, in reality, the long-distant past. The actual present is what you regard as the far-distant future. All of this happened a long time ago and is recorded in the standard history event line, so we know what will happen and can see when things happen that weren't meant to. You and I, and everything in this room, are actually ancient history. But if that seems a bit depressing, let me assure you that these really are the good old days. Yes, madam. A woman just next to us hadn't put up her hand, of course, but was clearly thinking of it. So, how is it possible to move through time? The force that pushes the fabric of time along is the past attempting to catch up with the future in order to reach an equilibrium. Think of it as a wave. And where the past starts to break over the future, in front of it, that's the present. At that moment of temporal instability is a vortex, a tube, in surfing parlance, that runs perpendicular to the arrow of time, but leads to everything that has ever happened or ever will happen. Of course, that's greatly simplified. But with skill, training, a really good uniform, and a bit of aptitude, you'll learn to ride the tube as it ripples through the fabric of space-time. Yes, sir. A young lad in the front row was the next to ask a question. How can you surf a time wave that is squillions of years in the future? Because it isn't. It's everywhere, all at once. Time is like a river, with the source, body, and mouth all existing at the same time. Friday turned to me and said in a very unsubtle whisper, Is this going to take long? Keep quiet and pay attention. He looked heavenward, sighed audibly, and slouched deeper in his chair. Scintilla carried on. The time industry is an equal opportunity employer, has its own union of federated time workers, and a pay structure with overtime payments and bonuses. The working week is 40 hours, but each hour is only 52 minutes long. Time-related holidays are a perk of the service and can be undertaken after the first 10 years' employment. And also, to make it really attractive, we will give each new recruit a Walkman and vouchers to buy 10 CDs of your... He stopped talking because Friday had put up his hand. We noticed that the other members of the Chrono Guard were staring in dumb wonderment at Friday. The reason wasn't altogether clear until it suddenly struck me. Scintilla hadn't known that Friday was going to ask a question. "You have a question?"
"I do. The question is, tell me the question I'm going to ask."
Scintilla gave a nervous laugh and looked around the audience in an uncomfortable manner. Eventually, he hazarded a guess. "You want to know where the toilet is?"
"No. I want to know if everything we do is preordained."
Scintilla gave out another shrill, nervous laugh. Friday was a natural, and they all knew it. The thing was, I think Friday did too, but didn't care. "A good point. And, as you just demonstrated, not at all. Your question was what we call a free radical, an anomalous event that exists independent of the standard history event line, or she. Generally, she is the one that must be obeyed, but time also has an annoying propensity for random flexibility. Like rivers, time starts and finishes in generally the same place. Certain events, like gorges and rapids, tend to stay the same. However, on the flat temporal plane, the time stream can meander quite considerably, and when it moves toward danger, it's up to us to change something in the event past to swing the time stream back on course. It's like navigation on the open seas, really, only the ship stays still and you navigate the storm." He smiled again. "But I'm getting ahead of myself. Apocalypse avoidance is only one area of our expertise. Patches of bad time that open spontaneously need to be stitched closed. Chrono theft is very big in the 7th millennium, and the total eradication of the Dark Ages by a timefoon is requiring a considerable amount of effort to repair, and..." He stopped talking, because Friday had inexplicably raised his hand once again.
"Why don't you tell us about the downside?" asked Friday in a sullen voice from beneath a curtain of hair. "About time aggregations and leaks in the gravity suits that leave cadets a molecule thick."
"That's why we're here," explained Scintilla, attempting to make light of the situation. "To clear up any small matters of misrepresentation that you might have heard. I won't try to convince you that accidents haven't happened, but like all industries, we take health and safety very seriously."
"Son," I said, laying a hand on his arm, "hear what he has to say first."
Friday turned and parted his long hair so I could see his eyes. They were intelligent, bright, and scared.
"Mom, you told me about the accidents, about Dad's eradication and Filbert Snood. Why do you want me to work for an industry that seems to leave its workers dead, non-existent, or old before their time?"
He got up and made for the exit, and we followed him as Scintilla attempted to carry on his talk, although firmly rattled. But as we tried to leave, a Chrono Guard operative stood in our way. "I think you should stay and listen to the presentation," he said, addressing Friday, who told him to get stuffed. The Chrono took exception to this and made a grab for him, but I was quicker and caught the guard's wrist, pulled him around, and had him on the floor with his arm behind his back.
"Mom," whined Friday, more embarrassed than outraged, "do you have to? People are watching."
"Sorry," I said, letting go of the guard. Scintilla had excused himself from his talk and came over to see what was going on.
"If we want to leave, we leave," growled Landon.
"Of course," agreed Scintilla, motioning with a flick of his head for the Chrono to move off. "You can go whenever you want." He looked at me. He knew how important it was to get Friday inducted, and knew I knew it too. "But before you go," he said, "Friday, I want you to know that we would be very happy to have you join the time industry. No minimum academic qualifications, no entrance exam. It's an unconditional offer. The first we've ever made."
"And what makes you think I'd be any good at it?"
"You can ask questions that aren't already lodged in the she. Do you think just anyone can do that?"
He shrugged. "I'm not interested."
I'm just asking for you to stay and hear what we have to say.
I'm not interested, replied Friday more forcefully.
Listen, said Scintilla, after looking around furtively and lowering his voice. This is a bit unofficial, but I've had a word with Wayne Skunk, and he's agreed to let you play a guitar riff on the second track of Hosing the Dolly.
It's too late, said Friday. It's already been recorded.
Bendix stared at him.
Yes, and by you.
I never did anything of the sort.
No, but you might. And since that possibility exists, you did. Whether you actually do is up to you. But either way, you can have that one on us. It's your solo in any case. Your name is already on the liner notes.
Friday looked at Scintilla, then at me. I knew how much he loved Strontium Goat. And Scintilla knew too. He had Friday's complete service record after all. But Friday wasn't interested. He didn't like being pushed, cajoled, bullied or bribed. I couldn't blame him. I hated it too. And he was my son, after all.
You think you can buy me? He said finally,
and left without another word.
I'll catch up,
I said as he walked out with Landon. While the swinging doors shut noisily behind them, Scintilla said to me, Do I need to emphasize how important it is that Friday joins the Chrono Guard as soon as possible? He should have signed up 3 years ago and be surfing the time stream by now.
You may have to wait a little longer, Bendix.
That's just it, he replied. We don't have much time.
I thought you had all the time there was.
He took me by the arm, and we moved to a corner of the room.
Thursday. Can I call you Thursday?
We're facing a serious crisis in the time industry. And as far as we know, Friday's leadership, several trillion bang-slash-crunch cycles from now, is the only thing that we can depend on. His truculence at this end of time means his desk is empty at the other.
But there's always a crisis in time, Bendix.
Not like this. This isn't a crisis in time, it's a crisis of time. We've been pushing the frontiers of time forward for trillions upon trillions of years, and in a little over 4 days, we'll have reached the end of time.
And that's bad, right?
Bendix laughed.
Of course not. Time has to end somewhere. But there's a problem with the very mechanism that controls the way we've been scooting around the here and now for most of eternity.
And that is?
He looked left and right and lowered his voice.
Time travel has yet to be invented. And with the entire multiverse one giant hot ball of superheated gas contracting at incalculable speed into a point 1 trillion trillionth the size of a neutron, it's not likely to be.
Wait, wait, I said, trying to get this latest piece of information into my head. I know that the whole time travel thing makes very little logical sense, but you must have machines that enable you to move through time, right?
Of course, but we've got no idea how they work, who built them, or when. We've been running the entire industry on something we call retro-deficit engineering. We use the technology now, safe in the assumption that it will be invented in the future. We did the same with the gravitube in the 50s and the microchip 10 years ago. Neither of them actually gets invented for over 10,000 years, but it helps us more to have them now.
Let me get this straight, I said slowly. You're using technology you don't have. Like me overspending on my credit card.
Right. And we've searched every single moment in case it was invented, and we hadn't noticed.
Nothing. Zip. Nada. Rien.
His shoulders slumped, and he ran his fingers through his hair.
Listen, if Friday doesn't retake his seat at the head of the Chrono Guard and use his astonishing skills to somehow save us, then everything that we've worked toward will be undone as soon as we hit time zero.
I think I get it.
Then why is Friday not following his destined career?
I've no idea. We always had him down as dynamic and aggressively inquisitive when he was a child. What happened?
I shrugged. All kids are like that today. It's a modern thing, caused by too much TV, video games, and other instant gratification bullshit.
Either that, or kids are exactly the same, and I'm getting crusty and intolerant in my old age. Listen, I'll do what I can. Scintilla thanked me, and I joined Friday and Landon outside.
I don't want to work in the time industry, Mum. I'd only break some dumb rule and end up eradicated.
My eradication was pretty painless, reflected Landon. In fact, if your mother hadn't told me about it, I never would have known it happened.
That doesn't help, Dad, grumbled Friday. You were reactualized. What about Granddad? No one can say whether he exists or not. Not even him.
I rested my hand on his shoulder. He didn't pull away this time.
I know, sweet pea. And if you don't want to join, no one's going to make you.
He was quiet for a while, then said,
Do you have to call me sweet pea? I'm 16.
Landon and I looked at each other, and then we took the tram back home. True to his word, Bendix had slipped us back a few minutes to just before we went in, and as we rattled home in silence, we passed ourselves arriving.
You know that yellow rod Bendix showed us, said Friday, staring out of the window.
Yes.
It was a half second of snooker ball.